Hello, dear friends, and welcome to Insight Reading Enlightenment, a show dedicated to sight reading and historically informed performance practice. My name is Darina Blogina, and today I have a guest. Could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, sure. I'm Vincent Flückiger. I'm a lute player. I draw a little bit.
Actually, I wanted to talk a little bit about your book that I'm holding in my hands. Thank you very much. And could you tell a bit about the concept? And maybe some of our friends, musicians on Facebook, they follow you and they know what it is about. So it's a comic book?
Yeah, it's a cartoon book. Yeah. It's about my life as an independent musician with humor, I guess, I hope.
But it's with your drawings, with your amazing
drawings. All my drawings, yes.
Yes, and they're fantastic and it's like highly recommended, guys. Did you study or you...
No, I didn't study. I started to draw a few years ago, not so many years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago. And that was because, I was a little bit bored in rehearsals. And I started drawing just in a note, you know, like you do in school. And it developed a little bit. I remember one time it wasn't cartoons at the beginning. It was just drawing. We had one rehearsal in Luxembourg, and it was really violin-oriented. And we didn't have much to do in the continuo. And it was a funny situation. And I drew it. I put it on Facebook. And I thought that would be it, just one idea once. And I had a second idea, so I drew it, put it again, and so on, until I had about 100 drawings. And I thought I could do a book out of it.
Yeah, very nice idea. But also, recently I visited a concert where you presented this project with a live drawing process that was going on. Could you tell more about this concept? Because I thought it was so interesting, and nobody does this in the early music field, I think. Something really
I saw it in pop music context or in jazz context, and maybe it was done with the classical music too. But yeah, so I was just drawing. I was on stage drawing during the concert. It was Il Trionfo del Tempo e del Disinganno from Handel. So it's a long piece, like 2.5 hours something. And I was just drawing live during the show. And I think at the beginning they hired me because they saw this book and I wanted something a little bit funny, because the libretto of Il Tempo is pretty heavy, and they wanted something a little bit lighter, but that's not what I did at the end, because I was free to do what I wanted, and I didn't actually, I don't know. Yeah, I did something else. It wasn't funny.
Yes, true. I remember at the end of the piece, it was quite dark, I would say.
It's pretty moralistic. I don't know how to say that. Yeah. I mean, the libretto, and I had to find a parallel story to tell. And the story of the libretto is about religion, and I mean, pretty dark. And I did something about madness. So it's... it's pretty dark too.
But also your drawings, they were kind of independent. And first I thought they are not connected, because you would, you would create a head of a woman and then flowers and then like ornaments. But then somehow it started to get like together in one picture. And then at the end it was really dark.
Yes, actually it's just a point of view on the story that is in the libretto. So it's connected, actually, even if it's not really obvious at the beginning, because it's only drawing, so there's no text or anything that could explain it. But yeah, it was connected. It was meant to be connected.
How does the association appear in your mind when you hear some music and you start the process? The drawing process, how does it work for you? How would you describe it? I know it's a very gentle and sensitive subject to talk about, because it's hard to describe, simply hard to describe.
Yeah, you mean for this specific piece or?
Or just in general, and how do you work? Which kind of tools do you use as a mental practice in a way? Because there's an image appearing, and were you able to detect how does it happen when an image appears that is related to a certain piece of music that you hear now?
I don't have images.
Okay.
But you want to do? You want to know when I draw?
Yeah.
So it's actually never related to music. When I do the cartoons, it's only a situation. Uh-huh. And in this specific piece with the orchestra, it was the link with the libretto. It could have been mm-hmm. jazz music or anything else. So it was more related mm-hmm. to the story. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then yes, I mean we. For the thing with the orchestra, we just discussed a lot with the conductor mm-hmm. about the concept of what it all means, and then I came up with that idea of the madness, and then I went to museums to collect images and ideas and.
And did you work with some historical images and ornaments? Did you try to recreate some historical 16th or like 18th century?
Not at all. Because I don't know if we have to talk about the story of the maybe very very shortly. So the story is that we have on one side we have it's Il Trionfo del Tempo del Disinganno. On one side we have time and disillusion or something like that, and on the other side beauty and pleasure, and it's a fight between them. And at the end, time wins, and he says to beauty, forget about all beauties of this world, go to the convent, to the monastery, and pray the Lord cut your hair. And that's what she does. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the old story, and I couldn't just illustrate that. Nowadays it seems weird. Mm-hmm. So what I found, my solution was that she's actually becoming crazy. She has like kind of a schizophrenia, mm-hmm. and times and disillusion are voices in her head.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a love story with pleasure, and I'm pleasure telling this story 20 years after, and how my loved one became crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so that was my idea. And then I went to museum. I was looking for images for death, because there's a lot. It's a theme, a big theme in mm-hmm. In the piece. And I found in various traditions over the world. So the Mexican skeletons,
mm-hmm.
the theater in Japan. Mm-hmm. We have in Switzerland the jaquetas, the carnival figures, and I mixed a little bit all of that. And then the premiere was in Bern in that Paul Klee Museum. Mm-hmm. So I went to this museum too, and I took some elements of elements of Paul Klee that I integrated in there. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool source of inspiration.
Yeah. I like it very much. Yeah.
Yes. Very cool. Yeah, because a friend of mine, Benoit, the oboe player, he was also playing in this production. And actually, he wrote me like, oh, yes, come to Bern. And yeah, there will be your drawings. Like, yeah. And I was like, wow, that sounds great. Yeah. And yeah, it was amazing. I think you kind of trigger a different side of your brain in a way when you also see a drawing that is appearing. Life. It's kind of a different process. It's not just the music mm-hmm. that sounds in the room at the moment. But yes, I think it's an interesting concept. And yeah, it's a shame that maybe not so many of those productions are being staged. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's...
No, I liked it very much. And the fact that for me, I used to play with that orchestra in the continuo.
Yes, right.
So it was nice to have another role for once. And drawing, usually when I draw, it's very small. Mm-hmm. It's like 10 centimeters on 10 centimeters. And then here there was this cinema screen. So yeah, just to see my drawing. So mm-hmm. so on another scale, that was... Mm-hmm. This was really interesting for me.
Yeah. And with this book, so it's usually about, you said it's about your life. So there is a lot. Ah, yeah. I see that. Is it from the production?
This one, no. It's a citation, Jean-Paul Basquiat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you also take him as an inspiration source for your drawings?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Sometimes, yeah.
He's fantastic.
I like to put some mail. Yeah.
I think that is so unique for our scene and our field of music that nobody has ever done something like that. And
yes, I'm very glad about it.
Such a good sense of humor.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, a very elegant sense
of humor. Actually, it was at a time when, because for me, the whole ancient music story, I mean, my story with the lute was a little bit of a joke, because I played the electric guitar, and then I went to the lute, to ancient music, and I wanted to spend like 10 years because someone told me that if you want to play the lute, you have to study it for 10 years. And I took it like a challenge. Mm-hmm. And then at one point, so I studied it for 10 years, I started to play the lute, but that wasn't my goal in life, to play ancient music. And at one point, I felt a little bit trapped in this, mm-hmm. in this ancient world music. I did what I wanted to do, and that was it. And I kept playing this continual things in orchestras and composers, ensembles, chiefs, conductors. Mm-hmm. And I'm more like in my nature, I'm more like I like the blank page and, mm-hmm. and create things. So that wasn't exactly I felt like not in my place. And then came this story of cartoons about the life of an independent music player. That was because there were situations where I could have cried, you know. And I mm-hmm. thought that's another. I could put it in another way and laugh about it. So that's the.
Yeah. And what would be your favorite situation in this book that you could?
I don't know. I like the first one, actually, the first drawing about the organ player, because that's a situation.
It's
things that I live, that I experience, but I guess that everybody experienced it in a way or the other. So that's the organ player asking if you prefer that sound foo or that sound foo. It's for everybody, so like, to everybody foo-foo. Except for him. It's the same, exactly the same sound. But I like the context because I like what happens after the drawing or before the drawing, because what makes me laugh, it's actually not the drawing in itself, but what will happen after, because someone has to answer him and tell him, oh, actually, I prefer the first one, knowing that he's not differentiated. There's no difference in for him.
Yes. Yeah. The whole context matters. Yeah. It's really interesting if you are in the context and you know what it is about, like the early music scene and the rehearsals that everybody, and maybe the situations that everybody had to face at some point of their life. So it is really so cool. Yeah. And you mentioned that you felt kind of maybe stuck being a continuo player and playing always and serving orchestras and composers. And do you think this idea is kind of old fashioned in a way? I mean, it is, of course. Do you think it's your way kind of to break this bubble and to bring some new ideas? Because I think every time I'm visiting an orchestra concert, I have it sounds amazing and people play so brilliant. And yes, but I have this impression sometimes that it's like a working machine in a way. And
yes, I don't know. It's just very, it's very personal for me. It's I can do only that. But there's a lot of people who are really happy with that, who do it in a great manner, and that's absolutely okay. It's just not, I can't do that, just that anymore. So I need other fields. I do improvised music to an electronic music. It came lately, but it's really a good balance for me.
And do you compose also?
Not really. Sometimes, but
Because I saw recently also you did this improvisation project with electronics. Mm-hmm. Could you tell more about that? What kind of music did you do and what kind of idea?
Yeah, so there's a few things. I play with a guy who he has electronics and cowbells. Yeah, so he records the sound and he works on the sound. And I play in that project, I just play the lute and more or less improvised things. I think I take fragments of music and then I just improvise around it. And he records what I do and works on the sound too. So that's one project. And we work with a cello player, Ilse Grudule, my wife.
Yes.
And here she plays more like a written pieces, and she improvises around those written pieces. And in that project, I just have electronic devices.
How come that you speak Russian so well?
After my matura, in Switzerland, I wanted to become an actor.
So
I played a little bit in different troupes, and I had a workshop with a Russian regisseur, and he was so great, amazing. I went to I saw his plays, and I wanted to study with him. And he was in St. Petersburg. He had a school of modern theater, and I asked him just if I want to study with you, can I come to St. Petersburg? And he was like, no, you're crazy. It's impossible. And I was 20 years old or something. And when you're 20 years old, you don't think too much. You just do things. Mm-hmm. I wasn't scared. So I just went there for half a year, a little less, because then he had to leave. It was in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And then he left to America. I didn't want to go to America. So I already started to play a little bit of lute. So I went to the conservatory for music. Cool. But that's it.
Wow.
And I loved that period. I was the only foreigner in the school, of course. And I lived the Russian life for 6 months. That was great.
So I found this piece from the Carlo Gee manuscript. It's called Cantate Domino, Canticum Novum. And it's written by the composer Bartolomeo Barbarino. And the thing is, so you said you don't really know anything about this manuscript, right?
Yeah. So you have a story about it, right?
Maybe it's not such an advanced story that I know. Yeah, if you guys know more about it, please write us. This manuscript, apparently it was found in one of the flea markets and somebody just bought it for a very little money. And then, you know, Elam Roth?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, so actually he did this edition, okay, the modern edition of that, that you can find on MSLP. Also, it's a very valuable source because, as you noticed, there are so many ornaments that are written out of that later style. Second piece, it was a dance by Praetorius from the Terpsichora collection. But tell me, because you read, it's also a modern edition, mm-hmm. and the kind of all the voices, they're written out in, let's say, in a keyboard tablature. Yes. And sometimes with for lute players, it's really a challenge to read.
The piano,
the clavier.
Yeah, we don't like it too much.
But it's because of your guitar past that you can read it so easily, or?
Oh, no. Because when I played the guitar, that was the electric guitar in a rock band, I couldn't read music at all.
Okay. And when did you start reading, actually, music notation?
When I entered the conservatory in Geneva, that's actually a funny story because... Yes, I was in Fribourg, in my hometown, and they had a rock band, and we were interested in having curious instruments, in integrating them. And somehow I heard a lute concert, and I thought that could be something. So I just wanted to hire an instrument. And someone told me that Jonathan Rubin had instruments. He was so I called him. He was in Bern, that's not far away from Fribourg. And they gave me an instrument and one or two lessons to know how it works. And so I took more lessons and it became a regular
activity.
Yes. And after a few months, he told me that it could be cheaper to go through the conservatory. Mm-hmm. Because we had private lessons. And so I did that. And after a few months, he told me that I could enter the pre-professional class. I did that, and after a few months, he told me that there was places in the professional section. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, why not? I was 20 years old, so the same for Russia. I just didn't think so much, but I couldn't read music. So there was an exam in Geneva to enter the class, and I trained during the summer to read music, but you can't really in 2 months learn to read music. I mean, sight reading and all that stuff. So I went to the exam. I could play it a little bit because I played the electric guitar and it's a little bit somehow related, but to read music. So I could see that the music was going up or down. I was singing something more or less. But the teachers there, they saw that I had ears that mm-hmm. that worked more or less, and they decided to risk that. And that's when I learned.
Now you're here.
Yeah. But I started learning the music with the solmization and the Guidonian hand and
all
that stuff. So it's really
That's a hardcore.
That's really.
So you started with this historical way, solmization. Yes. Maybe some of our listeners don't know
that's historical.
It's purely historical, and so this method was, I don't know, introduced in the even medieval times, I think, or like Renaissance times, with a Guidonian hand, and you would have the names of the notes on your fingers.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
And you can also show it to the choir. For instance, if there is a Kapellmeister, and you can show what is the next note to the choir, like to some voices, and you can show with both hands, actually.
But it was really, it was really hard to... to learn to read music.
Who does that in Geneva? Who teaches?
David Chapuis.
Okay.
Great teacher.
And so that's how you started reading musical notation.
Yes.
Wow.
So the guitar didn't help me to read the piano at piano score.
Yeah, because usually, like, if I would show up with this score, and there would be somebody else, they would be like, no, I need to intabulate that.
No, but I mean, it's easy. You just read the bass line and you see the chords more or less.
Yeah, and when you see things like that, like this typical bass movements.
Yes, you know what it is. Yeah.
Cool. And this lute that you use today, could you tell more about the instrument?
Yes, that's my first instrument, actually. The first instrument I bought. Yeah, after a few months with Jonathan Raymond, he told me you have to buy an instrument. So I bought this this arch lute, which was made in Switzerland.
In Switzerland. Yes. So it's a Swiss instrument.
It's a Swiss instrument.
Amazing.
Yeah. It was made by Maurice Ottiger. And that was my first instrument. It was made in 98, I guess. And it's still in perfect shape. I had one little problem with a fret a few months ago. But that's the only thing it had. And I'm really happy with that instrument. I love it.
And could you tell more about arch lutes in general? So what kind of instrument, maybe for the people who don't know about it?
It's a little bit of a shame because at the beginning I played it with, it's supposed to be double strung with double strings. And I played it for many years like that, for solo repertoire and for continuo. But nowadays, what is expected from a lute player is to play loud, and you can't really do that with double strings. So I saw people playing with single strings, and I didn't like really much the sound, because that's not really the sound you expect from an arch lute. But at the end, I just gave up, and now that's what I do. It's much more easier in orchestras and ensembles. It's a little bit of a shame, but well.
Yeah, and I just used for today this Renaissance Traverso, and it's in 440.
Yes.
So yes, I think it was. Yeah, it works well together with the arch lute.
Yes.
Yeah, but actually with Benoit, I'm just jumping now, but like we also recorded an episode, like an interview for our podcast when we had a gig in Norway. Hello, Benoit, if you're listening to us.
Hi, Benoit.
Another, and maybe the last question, where can we find your beautiful book, actually?
It's, you have to write me, actually. It's only because everything... it is on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
That was the media I used from the very beginning. And so there's a page, L'Ambiance va être chouette, where you can write me.
We will give a link in the description to your page also.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
And for playing together.
Yes.
Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.